This is Conversations with Safe Harbor Therapy, where your friendly practitioners from Safe Harbor Therapy Center come together to discuss life, wellness, and other topics that are important to you. Our team at Safe Harbor Therapy Center offers health and wellness services for body, mind, and soul to clients in Winnipeg and the surrounding areas. And I am Carmen Okmatovsky, marriage and family therapist and director of Safe Harbor Therapy Center. Welcome to the conversation. Well, welcome everybody back to Conversations with Safe Harbor Therapy. I'm here today with Chantel Neufeld and Erica James. Chantel is the resident hypnotherapist at Safe Harbor Therapy, and Erica is our sex and intimacy practitioner. Welcome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Nice to be here.
So I wondered if you could both start by telling me a little bit about you, about your training. I know we discovered that one area of overlap with the two of you is that you are both hypnotherapists. And I wondered if you could tell me like how you got into hypnotherapy.
Chantel, I'll give you the floor.
Okay. Well, from a very early age, like when I was a teenager, I knew I wanted to become like a psychologist or a therapist. I just didn't know how it would look. And one day I was scrolling Facebook and I saw this thing that said become a hypnotherapist. But in my mind, I just saw become a therapist. Mm-hmm. And at that point in my life, I had just been kind of through an awakening. Two of my siblings had died and I was just really in a place where, well, I left my husband. I had a new relationship and I felt really supported in like going for what I really wanted to do. And so I went and I started training in Winnipeg with John Toseland, and he, just everything that he was saying about the subconscious mind just really resonated with me. And in the training, we got to practice on each other. Right. And so, I found so much healing from my grief. Like I found that I was able to like reconnect with my loved ones and like say all the things that were unsaid and like release myself from any like guilt that I was feeling around their deaths, and also like just find really a lot of healing from my past, because I was raised in a cult and I had a lot of like anxiety from that and a lot of guilt and shame. And so just learning that so much change happens in the subconscious mind, and hypnotherapy teaches us how to access that by like relaxation. It was just so transformative to me. Did that answer the question or was there anything else?
I think so. Like that. So you saw an ad and you went to a training, and then it was really transformative for yourself, which I'm sure affirmed for you that this was the right path for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how about for you, Erica?
So for me, hypnotherapy was not at all a thought. I, at one point in my life, was in a toxic marriage, and that ended in a lot of trauma. But during that marriage, I began just shortly after we got married, having severe, severe panic attacks. And those lasted almost a year for me, and they were daily. I had to stop going to work. So the panic was really based around choking, and it was based around dying in front of people. Like in my body, it felt I was going to die, couldn't breathe. It was awful. Fast forward a year of that, I was about like 89 pounds because I couldn't eat anything or swallow, right? Uh-huh. And we were in Thailand. So we were visiting Thailand for a bit. And I had, up till that point, I had seen a psychologist, a therapist, the doctor, anything that I could think of to get these to either calm down or stop. And we were in Thailand. I had, to this day, the worst panic attack of my life. And even though I was medicated at that point, so I was walking around with medications to subside my panic, even though I was medicated, it wasn't helping. So I remember running through a little town in Thailand and knocking things over, trying to get back to where we were staying. And I remember getting finally back. And again, I didn't want to die in front of people. It was a fear for me. So I thought, okay, I'm dying. I should retreat. And I was sitting in a cold shower with all my clothes on, just trying to get my breath. And I told my partner at the time, like, I can't live like this. And if I have to, I don't want to. Like, it had just become too much for me to handle. And so at that point, like I said, I had seen any kind of, professional I could think of. And I found a lady in Bangkok who did hypnotherapy. And I thought,
Right there during vacation.
yeah. And I thought, you know
Wow.
what? I don't know. I've tried everything else. I can't live like this anymore. I saw
Wow.
her. It was an intro session. I walked into her office. I thought, wow, she's cool. It's a beautiful office. And like, but yeah, right. In my head, I thought, yeah, right. Like, you're not going to fix this for me. And she said, yeah, we'll fix this. Come back in a couple of days. I'll have your script ready. Sure enough, I go back in a couple of days. And I can say that this was probably 2014. From that day, I've not had another panic attack since then.
What?
Yeah, I have not had another panic attack since that day that I saw her. I came back, I listened to the recordings that she gave me. The rest of my time in Thailand was panic attack free. It was medication free. I would still have
What?
my medication. Yes, I would still have my medication with me, but I was not using it. And then about a month after being home, I threw the medication out and I have been panic attack free since the day that I saw her. So naturally,
Erica, that's wild.
I know. I know when I tell the story,
Wow.
I can't even believe it myself because I was in such a terrible state. I just was
Wow, from going
not
to from thinking you're going to die spontaneously on the street to being panic attack free.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Okay, so what so you did I don't know the hypnotherapy. I've never done it and I've never been trained in it. So you did a session. What's a script?
So script is something that you would personalize for a client based on what they desire to change and or grow and or for something Chantel does, sounds like she does a lot of past life regression, which isn't something I'm super familiar with, but it's basically a script to just uniquely address what they're dealing with. That's what a script
Okay.
would be.
So like a script, like a storyline or something that
Yeah.
someone's supposed to recite like lines in a movie, like what is
Right. So,
exactly?
as the hypnotherapist, I would have my client get comfortable. I would read them their personalized, unique script. I record that script and I send it off with them, a day after the appointment for them to listen to for a consecutive amount of days.
So
Okay.
yeah, if you've listened to any guided meditation, it's kind of like that, except
Oh, I
in her
see.
case, it's personalized.
Yeah.
Wow. So you both, and then Erica, you eventually got trained in hypnotherapy.
Immediately when I got home. Yeah. I was like, I need to do this. Like, this is insane. I was trained by the Manitoba Hypnotherapy Association of Manitoba, and so I'm still a member there. And so I'm double certified in hypnotherapy, and I had a practice just in Osborne years ago, and then kids and life got busy. But that's how I got into sex and intimacy therapy.
Okay. So Chantel, you've said there are no two hypnotherapists made alike. I'd be really curious to hear what approach you each use in your hypnotherapy.
Okay, well, it sounds like she kind of shared about hers, and she makes the personalized scripts, and I think that's wonderful. I have seen many hypnotherapists in my life, and each one was a completely different experience. And I feel like it really has to do with our gifts that we were born with, like what we naturally do. I find that I'm very connected to the subconscious for myself and with other people. And so how I do it is, like, of course, I was trained in scripts, where you relax the person, you can relax the body one part at a time, or you can, visualize walking down a hill, count backwards from 10 to 1. There are various inductions. Mine all are all around relaxation. And yeah, then it kind of goes into the person's inner landscape. Like, what do they see when they're at the bottom of the hill? Like, what kind of vegetation is around there? You know, are they on a path? Do they, what kind of buildings do they see? It's all very vague suggestions that I do. And it's really about, like, of course, before the session starts, we set an intention. You know, like, do they want to reconnect with a loved one, or do they want to address like anxious attachment style, or whatever their intention is. And then just symbols, and sometimes people show up on the journey. Like, sometimes we have them talk to a wise person to get advice. Sometimes they become the wise person, give themselves advice. You know, then the wise person gives them a gift, and sometimes they become the gift. And what are they like as this gift? Like, it's very symbolic and very, because the subconscious is all about, you know, colors and symbols and that kind of stuff. So yeah, how I'm different than a lot of therapists is that I give very vague suggestions, and I take all my cues from the client, and it's a conversation versus the hypnotherapist talking the whole time and the client being mostly asleep the whole time, if that makes sense.
So yours is kind of like a medium level, a medium level subcon. No, how would you describe that? It's
Yeah, like
medium something.
I do have like psychic abilities. Like, I do see things, and then I say them to the client, and often I don't know what they mean, but the client knows exactly what they mean. So, like I say, we all have different gifts, and they all come through in different ways in the session. Yeah.
Okay. And Erica, you say yours is like a deeper dive. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the hope. That's my goal, at least, is to have my client get as deep as they're real, you know, willing and relaxed
Yeah.
and able to go, because I think that for me personally, that's where the most change happens. And I'm giving suggestions, specific suggestions, specific to what issues or concerns they're coming in with.
So how does that work? Like, why does hypno work?
Because it's all about the subconscious mind. The subconscious is like where all of our like our memories are, and our emotions are there. Often when we have traumas, you know, as a child, and we don't have the people to help us process them, or we don't have the wherewithal to process them, then emotion can become like, you know, trapped like a bubble in our bodies. And sometimes, like, we feel it in our bodies in a certain place. And like, if we get into that like hypnotic state, the theta brainwave state, where you're super relaxed, then you can really go deep into yourself, and you can find out what color that part of your body is. You can bring it outside of your body. You can talk to it and say, what do you need? You can give it what it needs. And like, there's a whole bunch of deep change that can be done in one session through just being in that relaxed state versus using the conscious mind to try and figure out what's the problem. So the reason why hypnosis works so well is because it accesses the subconscious and can make the changes there.
The prefrontal cortex can get in the way a lot of times, eh?
Oh yeah, there's always that inner critic saying, oh, this won't work, or like just kind of like saying, no, that's not a thing, right? But when you're in that deep relaxation, like, that inner critic goes away, but not all the way. Like, a lot of people are scared of hypnosis because they think they're going to be like programmed for something, but that's not at all such a deep topic, because like, I was raised in a cult, and so when I was doing my hypno training, I recognized a lot of the tactics from the pulpit, you know, like the words people were using to try to manipulate people. But like, how I use hypnosis is to empower people, you know, like to give them their agency back, and to make their own choices. And yeah, it's that the rapport piece has to be there for any change to happen. So if the client doesn't trust and have rapport with their hypnotherapist, then, you know, it's they're not going that critical factor there is always going to be there. It's always going to be like not listening. But if they have rapport and they do trust, then, you know, they can do that deep subconscious work. Does that make
Yeah.
sense?
I think so.
I think an important piece of the hypnotherapy training that I've received, and something that I've always told clients, is if you're coming in for hypnotherapy and you have this pressing issue, right? So let's use my panic attacks. Something that she, as my hypnotherapist, had said to me was like, is there anything positive that you gain from this? And that's a fair question, right? So if you're coming in for panic, but you get all sorts of attention that maybe there's this other part of you that loves that attention, or it loves that, that people are worried about you, right? We have these things. It won't work, right?
Yep.
So for these
Like
predators,
if you are still kind of invested in it somehow.
right? Like there's a secondary gain. Right. If there's this bit of you that I hate these panic attacks, but man, do I love the way I get the attention from everyone, it simply will not work. And so that's a huge thing for me with clients that I ask is like, is there anything from this that is still a bit of a benefit for you? Because I don't want to lead anyone astray and say, like, yeah, let's do this, let's try this, because it won't work. Right. So you got to be really clear about like, this is what I want, and I'm willing to do anything to get that, in a sense. And I think that's incredibly powerful. And it really gives even a client this agency of choice of like, oh, right, I still kind of love that attention from that breakup or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah,
So.
what's really interesting for me is that in every single one of my clients, there comes a point in the session where there are two opposite things. Like part of me wants this, but the other part of me doesn't. So I have them bring out a symbol in each hand. So first the symbol of the part that doesn't want to let go of the fear surrounding the past trauma. And then they're like, like that's a heavy metal thing. It's this color, whatever,
Yeah.
And then we ask what the purpose of that is, and we kind of like chunk it up, like what's the highest purpose? And then we come on the other hand, we bring out a symbol and a color and everything of the opposite of that. And like, what is its purpose for you? And often, like, they're so opposite. And then we bring those two symbols together, like we mesh them together, and they become a whole nother symbol. And somehow that parts integration, it really helps to like have that part that has that secondary gain to kind of let go and be like, okay, we're on board. We're both working together for, your highest good.
Absolutely.
It's kind of it's interesting because EMDR is not brains is not a hypnotherapy, but there is a part like when I'm working with like behavior modification with EMDR, we also talk about the benefits of the behavior, whether that's substance use or nail biting. It's like there we it's so important to recognize what are the benefits, like why am I doing this? Like nail biting, it could be self-regulation. So there needs to be something else to self-regulate with. Because if you just like stop the nail biting and then you have no self-regulation, what you gonna do when you start to get dysregulated, right?
And
There
it's
has to be
crucial.
something. Yeah, absolutely crucial.
Such a good point.
You know,
Such a good point.
when people come in for like stop smoking, I think that's the most popular thing that people know hypnosis to be good for is stop smoking. Often for smoking, people have a positive association around it when they got started. It would help them fit in, felt belonging, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a completely different way of approaching the subject when we go into hypnotherapy versus someone coming in for, an emotional issue of like, I need to release this anxiety and that sort of a thing. I just want to also say about the panic attacks, you're not the only one. Like I've had clients, I've had one of my kids, like hypnotherapy is a game changer for panic attacks, for sure.
Of course, No, it definitely saved my life. So I have lots of respect for the practice.
That's amazing. So you both from after, well, after getting trained in hypno, you both moved sort of over to a focus on relationships, but not necessarily only with training. I should tell you went on for more training in IFS and Erica, you moved forward into training for sex and intimacy coaching. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Go ahead, Erica.
Sure. Years ago, I like after a pattern and a cycle of just negative relationships and societal pressure to be, I guess, in these relationships and have this happy ending, I was dissatisfied, and I've always been very interested in sex and in intimacy. So I started doing some research, and I found a school in San Francisco, and immediately I applied for the school, and I got in, and I did my 2 years, back and forth San Francisco, and here we are. So did that answer your question? How did I get into it?
Yeah. Did you do that like long distance or how did that work?
I did long distance, and then I would also go there and visit, which was a blast and
Yeah.
a huge, I don't want to say culture shock, because I have traveled a lot, so it wasn't a culture shock, but it was sexually it was a culture shock. I was like, wow. I
How?
Well, San Francisco is, ages above us in terms of sex positivity and having the opportunity to have your desires met and having the opportunity to have these open conversations about sex, about intimacy, about vulnerability. Like, they're ages beyond us. And so it's
Hmm.
very cool to see that. And then it was also like this burning question in my mind, like, how do I bring this back to Winnipeg? And that's not saying anything negative about Winnipeg. It's just saying that, culturally, societally, we're still quite, what's the right word?
Like it's more taboo.
So, and it depending where you are, right? I mean, certain scenarios may not at all, but it's still a bit of a taboo, right? And you don't have the opportunities to go to these clubs or these safe places to have your desires met the way they do. They have it set up differently. And so nonetheless, it was just like, I want to come back to Winnipeg. I want to do this full time, and I want to help people talk about sex in a better way and have better sex lives and have better relationships with their partners and their families and their children. And that's also a big part of this, right? It's not just sex and intimacy. Intimacy is the relationship I have with my son, right? And
Yeah.
so that's where we're at. And yeah, it was one of the best decisions I've made.
Intimacy being not just sexual, but relational, emotional intimacy, spiritual intimacy.
Exactly, right? It's the conversation you have with your best friend. It's the one you have with your mom, right? So intimacy is this massive umbrella, and that's always been a hard thing for me to market because of that, because I really want to, explore all of it. But yeah,
Right.
so yeah, intimacy, connection, relationships, heartbreak, all of it.
And then Chantel, your further training is in IFS. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and how it relates to a focus on relationships?
Sure. So IFS Parts Therapy stands for Internal Family Systems. And so it's basically the idea. Well, if anyone who, have you seen the movie Inside Out, where they have like the characters for anger and for, anxiety, for fear, for sadness, for joy? So IFS Parts is basically the idea that we have these different parts inside of us, parts that are like inner child parts, like that are exiled, and then there's protective parts that are trying to make us not feel the pain of our inner child, those exiles. The protective parts are kind of two, they can go to two different ways. One can be managers, so they're trying to make you more perfectionist, and then the other protective parts are very like firefighter parts, where they're, a lot of addiction is like a firefighter part to make you not feel those the pain of your inner child. And so at
So they're there to
IFS,
squash the fires.
exactly. And but they're both protective in a way. And so what IFS Parts does is puts you into the self. So the self is like the observer part. And like it really overlaps with hypno, because when you're in hypno, you really get into that seat of the self where you can look at the different parts of yourself like that, and visualize them as different things. And so some people like the metaphor of like being on a bus, like who is driving the bus? Is it the observer self who can make objective decisions? Or is it this firefighter part who wants to just go and, have some kind of addictive behavior? Or is it like a perfectionist part who's just people pleasing all the time, or, you know, wanting everything to be perfectionist, right? And when we have those protective parts driving the bus, running the show, it can make a mess of things. And so it's better to just, and a lot of people become like angry at themselves or at these parts of themselves. Often they can become polarized, right? Like a perfectionist part can be angry and polarized from the part that's having addictive behaviors. And so most people, just their go-to is to get mad at them and like hate themselves, whatever. But what IFS does is like accepts and loves and like tries to get to know and understand all of these parts. And like really send them love, give them what they need so that they'll sit nicely on the bus and let the self, you know, take the observer self, take the lead and make wise decisions.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember, I know there's a bunch of C words, not the rude C words,
of the self. It's compassionate, curious, creative, calm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like all of those good qualities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like centered. I don't know if centered is one of them. That's one that always comes to mind. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And so then how do you use hypno, Chantel, when you're working with couples?
Okay. So when couples come in, it seems very obvious within the first session how they are triggering each other. And then like I ask them like what their triggers are and what behavior of their partner they would change if they could pick anything. So, and then I do a one-on-one session with each of them. And then where we do the deep dive to find that inner child part and really get to the root of whatever issue it was that they brought up that is either their trigger or the behavior that their partner wants to change. It's usually the same thing.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm curious, with both of you working with relationships, well, actually, Erica, I haven't really talked to you about, like, how do you work with couples when they come for sex and intimacy coaching?
So I work with them, obviously, very uniquely, right? Based on what they're coming for is really how I set the stage for how I can help, right? A huge thing that I like to do is like just really create a menu for them, a menu that maybe hasn't been like offered to them in their lives before, right? We all have it. We all have always had it, but we've never been really empowered to use it because of societal beliefs and familial beliefs, all of these things, religious beliefs. So to have a menu, just like going to a restaurant, they give you a menu. This is what you can order, right? This is what you can order. Pick from the menu, you know, and you leave, right? This is an open-ended menu where it's like, what do you actually want? Right? And maybe it's not on this generalized menu. And how can we create that for you? How can we create this new item that isn't on this, you know, Manitoba menu that is a desire that you want met, or as a couple that is a desire that you both want met? Dealing with repair with couples, right? There's a lot of that, right? And so I have practical ways of, you know, using exercises to teach people how to have repair conversations. And these all sound, when I'm saying them, they all sound so simple. But not everybody was taught how to have a repair conversation. I know I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have these simple yet very important conversations with people and like, hey, right, being vulnerable, this is what this looks like. Let's try it together.
Mm-hmm.
Who
creates that menu? Do you create the menu? Is it like a co-creation? Do you kind of whip it out of a, you know, back pocket as a ready-made list?
No, the client creates the menu, but I give them options of like, what kind of menu are we creating?
Mm-hmm.
And how exciting is this menu for you? Because if it doesn't look that exciting, we're not looking at the right one.
Right.
If it doesn't look that healthy, it doesn't look that calm, whatever it is that core desire is for that client, let's make that one. Let's make the best menu of your life. And it doesn't mean it's all going to happen because this is a reality-based therapy. But it means that these are the options. And now that we know what we want, we can actually go for that. But a lot of people don't understand or know what they want.
So what if,
Again, it
like,
wasn't taught.
Yeah, if I was your client and I said, you know, I've heard a lot about this somatic stuff. Like, if that could be on the menu, I just want to understand what's that all about? What would you say?
Right. So I would let you know that somatic therapy is basically using the body as a source of therapy. So it's the body-mind connection, and we're just getting into the body and seeing where are we feeling these things, right? Because we live in a fast-paced world where I feel anxious, or, you know, I have a headache. Whereas sometimes, right, it can be so, not sometimes, always, it can be really helpful to sit down and feel those things and accept those things. And I'm more saying that in a blanket of like emotion, right? How do we actually sit with emotion? Carmen, you're a therapist. I know for sure you've said, you know, well, the best way to get through that is to really just sit with it. Right? And I know
Absolutely.
That there have been, I'm sure, clients that have been like, okay. Right? And my question
And
would be like, okay, okay, how? How do I do that when my hands are twitching and I'm triggered and I feel like screaming, but I'm at work, so I can't. And so some of these sessions are literally to sit with clients, with their feelings, empathetically, and sit there with them. Because if they can do it in this room, then hopefully they can do it in their room or wherever they are.
Well, I mean, as you were talking about making the list, I was thinking even the act of making the list would be pretty revolutionary, especially if somebody hadn't already like learned to sit with their own selves or sit with their own bodies. Because even to feel through, like, what do I like? What don't I like? What does sound like an exciting option, even if I've never explored that option, you know, like, you would have to really be in tune with the way that you're reacting to even the thought of different options.
Right. And that's the fun of it. It's like not everything on that menu is 100% sure shot. Maybe there's something on that menu that's a little like, I don't know if I like it, but I'm going to maybe try it with my partner this week. And that's really exciting because hopefully you have a supportive partner and hopefully you try this thing and it's maybe not the thing you thought it was. Scratch that off the menu. Let's add something else. And that's the fun of it.
Exactly. The exploration then is like a no thank you, or oh yes, and
oh yeah, this is at the top of the menu now. This is
right.
VIP. Exactly, right? So it's exploring ourselves and exploring our own bodies and everything that comes along with that, right? And people often that I see, they find themselves very lonely. Like they're alone. And so I think my job in those moments is to create a menu for them. Like, okay, so here's reality. These are the situations and let's create this menu. And like, how can we fill up that resilience basket that you have? And how can we handle these moments, you know? So.
I don't know. I'm thinking that a lot of sex and intimacy coaching, correct me if I'm wrong,
please.
Cause this might just be my perspective, but a lot of it must be just teaching people how to connect with their own bodies and their own, like, the somatic experience. Like, where do emotions sit in my body? Where do the experiences sit in my body? I know when I started therapy ages ago, and a therapist would say to me, where do you feel that in your body? I would look at them like they were out of their minds. Like, I don't feel that in my body. Those were words that just came out of my mouth. Like, didn't you just hear me? You know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I was like totally disconnected from it. And it took me a very long time to be like, oh, yes. When I say that, I do notice a tightness in my belly. Or when you say that, I notice that my shoulders want to go up to my ears. And,
sure.
You know, and I'd start to feel, you know, just start to feel kind of like that manifestation. But it took a while to really tune into that.
Right. And it's exploratory, right? Because it's still, even if you've done it for the last 3 years and you've tried to practice that, it's still like, why did my shoulders go up like that when you know, this person said that? Why did I have that reaction? So the work never stops, but trying to get a little bit more comfortable with the work, that is the work, right? It is sitting with it. And so if you have a coach or a practitioner that's going to sit with you in it and they can empathetically feel that with you, I think it does a lot. I think it does a lot for people. And there's another somatic aspect to that, which is, yeah, it's also, there's another component, which is like, how do I have sex in a way that feels good for me? How do I give a good blowjob? Hope I can say that on here.
I don't see why
Whatever.
not.
No worries. You just gave me the green light. No, but you know, or hey, I wanna try anal, right? That's my goal. That's why I'm here. Okay, fun. Let's practice. And I don't mean in a literal way, but what I mean is, let's see if that is something that's actually on your menu that you like. And then if it is, let's do it. Let's practice it. Let's learn about it. So there is that aspect of it, and there also is touch involved in my sessions when both me and my client are fully consenting to that. And I think it's something therapeutically beneficial for them.
Okay.
So that should be noted.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna ask questions about that because do you mean like sexual touch, or do you mean like sitting close to each other on the couch kind of touch? Like, what kind of touch do you mean?
So I mean experiential touch. So let's imagine you're my client, or you know, and you're wanting to go on a date, and you're not sure when the right time to maybe put your hand on my leg is, right? We might practice that, and I might give you my real feedback. My real field feedback is, you know, as this person sitting here, that felt a bit quick for me. Can we try it this other way? Because I want to teach certain clients how to read my emotions a bit too, right? Am I giving you an idea that like I don't want touch? Secondly, it can be for clients that have severe loneliness. They may need somebody to sit beside them and hold them. I do offer that. It is a full close on service, and I'm very in tune with what I'm comfortable with, and there really isn't anything sexual about the touch,
I
right?
see.
There's a bit of playfulness in there, in the sense of maybe a client really needs to get out of their head during sex, right? They're in their head. I got to pay the bills. I got to take care of the kids, whatever it is. There's games that I play with clients like that, where it's like, let's be silly, let's be weird in front of each other, let's laugh, let's dance, right? Let's silently dance. And so there's touch involved in that too, right? So yeah, there's definitely boundaries to what I do, and I'm very comfortable with those, and I'm comfortable telling people what those are.
Okay. I mean, that's good to know, because yeah, the loneliness can actually just it can just get in people's way of actual connection. It can make you almost like paranoid about any type of connection where there's like no flow anymore, right?
And just to have that bit of human touch, there's people out there that really they don't receive human touch, right? And that's not an option for them. And I think it's a need. I think it's a serious need for people to have a loving, empathetic person next to you and say, like, I'll hold you.
Absolutely. This is sort of it reminds me in a way of like the emotional holding of talk therapy sessions, where we need people to like deeply see us and deeply and meet us where we are. And like that's the entire point of therapy. It's not just to like have a coffee house conversation, but like to be really deeply seen and known and held. And in doing so, it rewires the way that we can relate to ourselves and to other people. And you're basically saying the same thing about even just like the physical space.
And you know, I know for certain people that the touch can feel like, oh, well, I don't want that. And that is absolutely not something that ever has to happen within a session. But I do think that rewiring, like you said, a client to be like, I got that. I'm nourished a little bit, right? I have somebody that is deeply seeing who I am, right? And I had a client use the word naked rather than vulnerable. They said, I'm naked in front of you right now, emotionally and mentally. And it's been years since I've been able to reach that. It's
Wow,
just
that's
like,
such
for
a,
me, it's just like,
yeah.
oh. It's like, oh, right? And like, that's for me somatic therapy, right? And I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy good work, and I love it so much. And yeah.
It's very needed. I love that you do that. And yeah, it's just a different flavor of what I offer. Because like the body is the subconscious mind. And with the parts therapy, I help the person go inside and like see, hear, and love and accept and hold those parts of themselves. Does that make sense? So
Oh yeah.
it's just in a different form.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like I had a client recently who like one of the when she brought the two opposite symbols together, it became a blanket, and she wrapped herself in a cocoon, and she brought her 5-year-old self into that cocoon to then, evolve and become a butterfly. And it was, I didn't come up with any of these. It was all her subconscious mind's, bringing all of that up.
Powerful work.
Very powerful.
I was just gonna say, so Chantel's bringing up this, 5-year-old girl, and I just wanted to note that in my session for my panic attacks, I remember I re-met myself, and she allowed me to choose my age, and I remember it being 12, and I remember it being I was fully under hypnosis, obviously, and I remember there was just tears streaming down my face. I was too deep to like be full crying, but I just remember the sensation of like this because I
The
saw her,
release.
like, yeah, and I saw my 12-year-old Erica, and I was just, it was just such a heavy experience. And it was like, you don't have to be scared of the world, you're okay. And it just that your comment brought me back to that, and it's like such powerful work.
It's just like tell yourself everything you needed to hear at that time. And it's like me as a therapist, I don't know what they needed to hear, but they themselves know exactly what they needed to hear. So this in that quietness of their own mind, they tell themselves. And it's like you can do like, a million years of work in like 5 seconds when you're in the
This is what they
subconscious
say
mind.
about hypnotherapy. It's like it's a lot of years of work condensed, right? So.
So you're talking a bit about how you can encounter your own self in your work, but I'm wondering also if you could talk about how clients can encounter their partners, like basically through communication. You both, I'm sure, have like slightly different ways of approaching partner communication. Would you be willing to touch on that?
Sure, like it's funny how we attract clients who, kind of are going through the same thing that we went through a couple years ago. That's how it is for me anyways. So yeah, I myself have struggled with like codependency, people pleasing, and also not feeling safe to, communicate with my partner when something is wrong. And so a tool resource that has helped me a lot is like relationship check-in questions. Where once a week or once a month, depending on your partner situation, where you just take, you set aside a time, a space where it's just the two of you and you are focused on, like, you can bring up issues or, like, if there's anything left unsaid, or you can talk about the good things too, like, how do I bring value to your life? Any of those kind of questions where you feel that it's a safe place that you can bring up something that, was said or done that they didn't mean to hurt your feelings, but it did. And where you can, say that without them feeling or, being like defensive or angry or anything like that. It's a more like loving, sandwiched within compliments way of dealing with conflict. So that's been really helpful to me. And so I've definitely used that with my couples clients.
You know, what I like about that is that usually, not always, but so often within couples, there's one person who is really eager to like chase down the other partner and have these important, vulnerable conversations. And then there's one partner who's just kind of like backing up slowly and would rather not just dive into it. And if you set aside that time where you know you're going to get together and you know this is going to be the topic of conversation, it guarantees the one partner that there will be the time that they can talk, and it guarantees the other partner that they're not going to be ambushed with the questions at any given point. You're not heating up a hot dog in the microwave and suddenly be asked like what's your plan for the next 5 years, you know? So it just sort of like contains it, and it does make a much safer place to have those difficult conversations, or not even difficult necessarily,
Just
but just
getting
bigger, like
vulnerable.
heavy. Sorry. Pardon me, Chantel, can you say a little bit, like, can you tell me what some of those questions would be?
Okay, yeah, I have a list here. So it's like you start out with the good stuff, like what do you appreciate about me, or what do you appreciate about our relationship? What was, what brought you joy this week? What was hard this week? So they feel seen and heard, and like, how can I support you best this week? And you're asking each other this. It's not all one-sided. How is our sex life? Is there anything that you'd like to try? Anything different? How do I contribute to your life? And is there anything unresolved? Anything left unsaid? Any issues that we need to confront? That sort of thing. And so, like, if you kind of know coming into the conversation that, some hard things will be discussed, you can kind of like prepare yourself for it, and you can kind of slowly let your walls down a little bit, not have all those protective parts on board ready to fight and, ready to be defensive, or, ready to run away. What you said before about people who come to couples therapy, it's usually one person driving it. And what can be a little tricky is when one person thinks that it's the other person's fault, like everything that's wrong in the relationship is the other person's fault. And so in couples therapy, it's good to, introduce the idea that, hey, we personally have triggers, and if we can like deal with those triggers, then what the other person says or does isn't going to really matter as much. It's not that they're a bad person. It's not that they're intentionally trying to hurt you. It's not that they are the entire problem, but taking some personal responsibility in that, like, hey, maybe we have some inner child stuff to deal with here.
I like that.
Like, it's like sometimes people come in there and they're just like, especially with hypnosis, they have a wrong conception of what it is, and they're like, hey, can you just fix me? Like, put me under and just say your words, say your magic words, and fix me. I'm like, that's not how I work. Or they bring their partner and they're like, can you just fix them? Like, they're the problem. Like, I'm just gonna sit here and watch and gloat and be like,
Like, I
yeah.
present to you
Yeah. Can you hypnotize them
the
and just make them better for
problem.
me? Like, no,
Clear
that's not quite how it works.
the list. Erica, I heard you mention before that you were trained in 10 steps to repair for couples. Or I guess it's not just couples, but specifically we're talking about couples at the moment.
Yeah,
Would you be
repair
willing to?
conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. Yeah. So the idea behind this, I'll call it an exercise for easy purpose, is to learn how to have a repair conversation and have both partners be heard and feel heard and seen. So there's 10 steps to that, and it seems quite technical the way I'm going to list them, but it isn't. It's basically how do we have a conversation where Carmen, you feel heard and seen by me, and I feel seen and heard by you. So first thing is knowing that you're in an emotional conversation, right? How often do we slip into conversations, whether it's with our children, right? We're talking, so what time does basketball start tonight? And now they're emotional, they're triggered, and you're kind of like, well, I would do, you don't
And
even know
they're like, back
you're in an emotional
off. And you're
trigger.
like, I don't
You don't
know
even
what
realize.
happened.
You don't even realize in that moment you're in an emotional conversation. So to learn that one skill is like, oh, here we go. I'm in it. I'm trained for this. I can do this. The second one would be to gauge your level of trigger, right? Gauge that, right? Am I at a nine? Is this bad? Right? Or am I at a one? And like, I'm a bit off, but I'll be all right. And to give your partner or the other person in that conversation the benefit of the doubt that what they did was not ill-intentioned. And that's basically what that looks like. The rest are quite simple, but like deciding who will go first and actually allowing that person to speak and have a full release of this is me, this is what's happening for me. And to be as vulnerable as humanly possible within that, because if you've followed these first four steps, you know that you're in a repair conversation and you know what you're receiving and you know what you're giving. So the goal is to be as vulnerable and say the things, right, that you're a little bit scared to say. Listen empathetically, obviously, right? Anytime somebody's sharing vulnerably with you, I think our job as humans is to really try to listen empathetically and put ourselves in their shoes and try to understand what that might feel like for them, whether we agree or not. Cop to the things that we are responsible for, right? We may not agree with our
Absolutely.
partner or the other side's argument, but we are, I at least would like for people to be able to say, you know what, this part of that, I will copy that. I did do
So
that.
that when you say cop to, it means like taking accountability for?
Yeah, take acceptance
Okay.
for your part in what's going on. And give reassurance. Step eight, give reassurance to your partner, to the other person. Number nine is make sure both parties feel they leave this conversation feeling seen and understood, and that we don't leave this conversation until we're there. And the last thing
That's
is,
such an important one, because so often when people fight and they're not fighting well, it seems like the whole point of the fight is to make the other person not be seen and heard. Like, I'm going to like talk over you, or I'm going to invalidate your points because I feel less than if you have space or if you
right?
are right in any way.
Or I don't
But
feel
yeah,
safe if you are right in
right.
any way.
Exactly.
Right? And so you are right, because there's so many people that leave these conversations feeling very unsafe. He's going to leave now that I've had this conversation, or whatever it is, right? And the last step is reconnection, right? Have something to reconnect on. Like, okay, we got through this. Awesome. What do we need to do to reconnect? As a
Which could
friendship.
be, it could be like, it could be makeup sex. It could be having a cup of
Totally.
tea. You know, it could be like petting your cat together. It doesn't matter. Like,
It could be a
anything that's
walk. It could be
reconnective.
looking at old travel pictures together. Like, look how happy we were, right? Look at that. Let's get back there. It could be literally anything, but just something that reconnects you to that partner. And I hope at the end of that, it feels like I've gotten that out, because we've all had that situation where it's like, well, I had the talk. I had the talk with the person. I'm still mad.
And doesn't still doesn't feel good.
I need to now go back and have another conversation. And that avoidant partner maybe is just like, really? Again? Triggered. So if we can learn to have these conversations and hold our boundaries and hold others, and our job in relationships, well, this is my opinion, but our job in relationships is to not fix each other's wounds, right? And not heal each other's wounds, but to be aware of them, right? To be aware of
Absolutely.
them and say, like, I see your bruises and I can't fix them for you, and I'm not willing to, because that doesn't seem like a healthy relationship. But I will be mindful where I touch. That is my job as a good partner, anyways. It's like, I see your wounds, I see where you're hurt, and I'm going to try to avoid those parts, right? But I won't do it to the point where I'm now breaking my own boundaries. If I do need to go there, I'll let you know, and I'll let you know in a soft way, because that's my job as your partner or your friend
I
or
really
as
like that
a mom.
visual.
Yeah, and it's
I
not
really like
just
that
like
visual.
with couples, like you say, it could be with a friend, it could be with a mother, it could be like,
Absolutely.
all relationships can be tricky at times, especially now with like so many polarized views, like with politics and whatnot. And what I find is that like sometimes there's like we hold like 50% of the issue, and the person that we're in conflict with has like the other 50% of the issue, because it's such a complicated issue. It's not something we can actually fix. But when we can kind of like go above and see, like, oh, this is like so complex that it doesn't matter if like you have the exact same view as me. I don't have to, like, I can still be in relationship with you without you having to agree with me 100%. Like, if you didn't have that polarized view as me, I would have to contain that whole complex issue myself, right? And so it's just like it's bringing more balance, really, if people could see that they don't have to solve an issue and become exactly, on the same page, but they can both hold it together.
And I think that there's the issue that comes up for me with that is like, then if I can't be seen fully by my partner, fully by my friend or my mom, right? Because of their screening of what's okay and what isn't. I mean, that's a problem, right? I spent so many years of my life like hiding who I fully am because I didn't want to be too much or not enough or left or all these crazy fears. And so it brings both, right? It's like you got to find your community and you got to find your people.
And that's hard. It's hard to be vulnerable and say, like,
And it's scary.
I have this belief that I know is different than everybody else. Will you still be in relationship with me once you know this difference with me. Like, is it okay that we can just hold our differences together and try to understand the other person why they have those? Because it's usually, you know, like fear-based or whatever on the different polarities, but that it's still okay to be friends.
Yeah. And I actually do an exercise within my practice, which is literally built around that. And it's around, it's an exercise that it's built as an exercise within a session where it's like, we're going to do this shame share. Okay. And I'm not going anywhere. No matter what you say to me, no matter what you confess, I will be here. I'm not leaving. And the emotion that comes from that, from hearing like, I'm not going anywhere, Chantel, I'm with you and I'm not going anywhere. It's just like, whew.
That really brings the walls down. And
yeah,
I mean, and in a couple, in a sexual relationship, that can really make for some good sex after,
Exactly. And so many people have never heard that before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Just like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm sitting here with you no matter what you say to me. So
wow. It's powerful.
Yeah. I love this work.
This work is amazing. Well, we're going to wrap up. Do either of you have any last thoughts or anything you want to leave off with?
No, I just want to say thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah,
there's
just one thing popping up for me is like the idea of the story we tell ourselves, right? Like to entertain that thought of, you know, what is the story I'm telling myself in this, you know, conflict or in this issue I'm bringing to therapy? And is there any way that we can, you know, reframe that story? Like, is there any other possibilities? And like she was saying before with the menu, the word I give to it is resources. Are there any other inner resources that we can, you know, entertain that would make that story a little bit better? Yeah.
And I like that too.
Thanks for the opportunity to share. I find it's just so wonderful to talk to other people who understand, you know, what the subconscious mind is and what the possibilities are for healing.
Yeah, so wonderful.
Absolutely.
Can I just speak quickly to what Chantel said?
Go right ahead.
Yeah, right? Like that narrative, right? Like what's running in all of our heads right now, all three of us. Like there's a narrative for you, Carmen, I'm sure. There's a narrative for you, Chantel. I know there's, I don't know, 15 for me right now, right?
Yes.
So I struggle with that. Right? I do this work. And so I'm like, we should do this exercise. But I also struggle with that immensely. Right? I have massive abandonment wounds. Right? So I think everyone's leaving for any reason.
Yeah.
And so that's always the narrative. And so just going back to that repair thing within couples, it's like, what do you do when the repair, it's not an actual reality. It's just a feeling of like, he's going to leave. And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm literally right here. And how do you handle those narratives or those conversations of like, well, this is just what I feel. And this is just what I'm scared of. And that's just what brought me there when you said that. It's just like, yeah, we all have these narratives. And how can we accept them, and but also tame them?
I think you in presenting the narrative to your to a partner or to a friend and saying, okay, this is the story I'm telling myself. I see you kind of winced and turned away when I said that. And the story I'm telling myself is that you would rather not hear anything that I have to say. And they'd be like, no, I stubbed my toe. That was, you know, and you present the story and then you give them the opportunity to clarify. So it could be that, you know, it was nothing. I stubbed my toe. Or it could be, yeah, that actually reminded me of this other time that was really painful. So let's talk about it. But without presenting it and with just trying to write the story in our own head and come to a conclusion, that's actually quite dangerous in a relationship. So telling the other person the narrative that you're creating invites the conversation and invites intimacy.
It does invite both.
But the mind is a meaning-making machine, right? Like we often go, this means that. Like if they didn't want to spend time with me on, you know, when I put out this bid for connection, that means they, you know, we're losing touch. Like they have intentions elsewhere, you know, like making it about us. But when we can put ourselves in their shoes, it's like, maybe they're having a hard day. You know, maybe there's something came up for them and they're really trying to sort it through. Like there are a lot more options that sometimes we don't consider, and going to therapy can bring up some of those options and, you know, just give us a, oh, this means something else entirely, which makes our experience in life a lot better.
It's also a struggle, I think, sometimes, Carmen, right? To like, oh, I stubbed my toe, right? And the narrative's like, no, you didn't. Was watching the whole time. No, you
The
didn't.
story I'm
Now
telling
you're
myself
lying.
about your stubbed toe is that that's false.
And it's like, well, now the narrative's that you're lying. So let's flip it. And so it's comical, especially when these things are they're wounds from the past, right? And so you have to also, I think, in a reality-based world, you got to be mindful of like how much are you explaining the narrative? Like if I explain my narrative all the time, my partner might be like, "Are you okay, honey?" Like, right? Like, are you okay? Right? And so it's, yes, it's so important, but it's just comical to me because I see how like the minds work, right? Oh, I stubbed my toe. No, you didn't. I was watching, right? So.
Yeah, and these stories play out like the stories of our childhood, our relationship with our parents, and our traumas. They play out in our romantic and sexual relationships, I find, because those are the ones that you usually we get the most vulnerable in. And yeah, the stories can play out all sorts of different ways, but they just keep repeating themselves no matter if you decide to get a different partner. Like, oh, you know, like you're still there, right? Like your stories are still gonna keep popping up if you don't like address the inner child stuff and you know, start telling different stories.
Well, and I don't think it's a surprise to anyone that like the things that we enjoy during sex and the things that we look for during sex are built in our childhood, right? Those are things that were somewhat pre-decided for us, and they're changeable, of course, right? That's not to say they're not changeable, but we build those wants, those needs sexually as children without knowing we're doing so, but right? So for people that like, you know, different things, it's like it's interesting to say, okay, well, let's go back, right? Let's go back a bit for that. So
And the most life-changing thing for me with therapy in general is like the first thing my first therapist ever said to me was be gentle with yourself. And like as I've gone through therapy, my inner critic has turned into my inner coach. Like now when I face challenges and when I feel triggered, my inner self says, that's okay, you got this, it's a more comforting voice than the, you're a piece of shit, like kind of voice, right? Like
All the normal
it's
stuff,
all your
you
fault. Yeah.
mean?
So I feel like that's just a big benefit of therapy is just having that inner voice change can make like your ex life experience is like heaven on earth versus like hell on earth.
And your perception of what the world is, right? Yeah. Well, so I'm gonna celebrate for you that that voice has changed because that's a hard thing to do.
Now that's remarkable. All right, you two. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
You're so welcome. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Talk soon. Bye.
Okay,
Bye.
bye-bye.
Thank you for joining our conversation today. If you would like to book a session, you can visit our website at safeharbortherapy.com or our booking page at safeharbor.jnarbour.com. That's safeharbour.jnarbour.com. For more info, or if you have questions or even suggestions for our podcast, you may write us at info@safeharbortherapy.com. We hope you'll join us again for our next conversation with Safe Harbor Therapy.